This is the Skirted Roundtable. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings.
This is Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8.
And this is Joni Webb with Cope to Texas.
And this week on the Skirted Roundtable, we're thrilled to welcome Karen Carroll, who is the editor-in-chief of Southern Accents magazine. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to have someone associated with such a beautiful magazine who also is a blogger, which is, you know, obviously our where we come together in our love of interior design and communicating that love. And we wanted to know, you know, can you tell us about your background and how you came to be what you're doing now?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I'm honored that you call me a blogger, since I am definitely the newbie in the group. I've only been blogging for a few months, but certainly have been enjoying reading all of your blogs as well as so many others out there. So it was kind of fun to jump into the conversation. But my background is as a print editor, and I've been with Southern Accents for about 20 years.
Wow.
Yes, that means I started the course right out of grade school.
Yes, you were a mere child.
Exactly. But I did start a couple of weeks after I graduated from college. So my background is actually not in design or journalism per se, but I was a political science major, and I also studied art history. But I've always loved magazines. And I live in Birmingham, Alabama, and that is where there's a company called Southern Progress Base, which publishes a lot of magazines, Southern Living, Southern Accents, Cooking Light, Health, and Coastal Living. And I really thought it would be fun to work in a magazine. So I was very fortunate to be in the right place at the right time. And I started out, you know, at the very the bottom of the food chain. So I like to say I was doing everything from sweeping floors to writing articles, and it wasn't obviously quite that way, but I was able to just really learn a lot about the magazine publishing business through my work as an editorial assistant, which was how I started, and I was able to keep moving up and doing new things and more exciting things. And I really just have an inherent love of design. So it was just a matter of being in the right place at the right time and making the most of the opportunity.
That's fascinating. I had no idea that you actually started out there, you know, on the bottom and worked your way up like that. That's a true American success story.
And you love hearing stories about people who, I'm always wondering, when there are people in top ranking positions, how did you get there? Especially at a magazine, being editor in chief. The great thing about Southern Accents is it's a relatively small magazine in terms of staff. We've certainly grown over the years. But when I started, there were probably, I think, six people on staff putting out a magazine six times a year. And frankly, you had to do a little bit of everything. You couldn't specialize and just say, okay, we have people who just write or people who just lay out stories. It was really a team group effort. And so I was exposed to so many different aspects of magazine publishing. So I really do feel like along the way I've done a little bit of everything.
How many employees do y'all now have?
We have 14 on staff now.
That's still really small. I mean, I know you contract out, but that's still not a big amount.
It isn't a lot of people, but we've always operated very efficiently, which of course is a bonus in these economic times. And we depend a lot on freelance. A lot of our writing is freelance, all of our photography is freelance. We don't have any staff photographers. And so we're very dependent on a network of people to help us put together stories and each issue. We could not do without our wonderful group of freelancers.
If Southern Accents, it's a national publication, correct? Or it's distributed nationally?
Well, it is distributed nationally. We like to call it a national magazine with a regional accent.
Yeah.
About 30% of our readership is outside the South, But editorially, we focus on the 16 states that we call the South, and that ranges from the Maryland-Delaware area all the way to Texas. And then we will photograph and do stories outside of the region, but they always have some sort of Southern connection. Like it might be a Texan, Joni, who has a wonderful house in San Miguel, or right. someone who has an apartment in Paris, and it's kind of a second home for them. So that's when we have the opportunity to kind of break out of those geographical boundaries and explore territories outside of our region. But one thing that we really, you know, hope and certainly strive for is that even though we have a regional focus, I think the style of interiors that we tend to show have appeal outside of the region. And hopefully once somebody gets past the name, if they're living in California, which Megan, for instance, California is our fifth largest market. Hopefully once they get past the name Southern Accents and they just pick up the magazine, they'll see that there's something in there that appeals to their sense of style, their sensibility, whether or not they live in the South or not.
And I think that when people outside of the South, when we think of Southern design, I think that there's an inherent design sensibility that's classic, that has a great old school lasting style to it. And there's certainly, even though, you know, we think of the West Coast as being, you know, on the cutting edge and hip and trendy and that sort of thing, I think that there is always, that's a design sensibility that is maintained always. And it's just a beautiful classic look.
That's great to hear. As I said, we have a large following in California, and I think there's a real relationship, that kind of indoor-outdoor living, love of the garden, love of bringing the outdoors in. It's a cliche, but it's true. And I think that that is an area where the climate and, again, that just relationship between house and garden, I think, you know, is very similar.
Well, I've noticed that the up here in Massachusetts, we actually don't see too much of the magazine here, except through like antiques dealers. I've noticed carry it; they have subscriptions because it fits with their aesthetic. But I think because we don't have a whole lot of outdoor time, either you get the Southern magazines because you just want to dream over the possibility of having an outdoor room. But they really aren't that successful here because we only have about 3 minutes when you can be outdoors.
Right.
Really
right.
Happily.
Right. Well, and it doesn't surprise me to hear that you find antiques dealers and such follow the magazine, because that is a very important part of what we do. We
yeah.
definitely believe in the something old, something new mentality, that it's really that mix of old and new that makes an interior interesting. So we do a lot of coverage on antiques.
Well, being from Texas, I'm thrilled that you agreed to come talk to us, because I grew up on, I mean, I'm 54, but, you know, I grew up on Southern accents and Southern living. And I think I told you that when every month when the new magazine comes out, my mother will call me and say, "Oh, did you get your copy yet? Go turn to page 110, you know. You're just going to love this house, you know." And my aunt, when she was alive, she would do that. My sister and I do that. We literally will get the, you know, copy and discuss it with ourselves. And I imagine we're not the only family that does that. I can imagine that a lot of people sit around and do that.
Well, I certainly hope so, and obviously I love the fact that we're reaching several generations. You know, hopefully your daughter will be a reader one day if she's not already.
To me, it shows what a loyal readership. I mean,
right.
just hearing Joni describe how she and her mother would get on the phone and get so excited.
Yeah.
You must have, but see, I think that's what's so interesting, because it does have that regional flavor to it. There, it really creates sort of a sense of being a part of it when you're from the South, I guess. I mean, when I'm listening to this, it obviously is a lifestyle magazine that you completely relate to in a way that I don't know of any other interior design type of lifestyle magazine that does that.
Another reason why, Megan, is a lot of the designers are from your home, you know, your city. And
yeah.
so issue that comes out, you know, well, you may know the designers in this issue, whereas in House Beautiful or El Decor, you don't personally know the designers, but here you may, you know, and I think that adds to that feeling of loyalty that you have to Southern Accent.
You know, Southerners are all about making connections, and, you know, you sit down and within 5 minutes you can figure out somebody that you have in common or someone that you know. I think, you know, one, we're sort of inherently nosy, too. We love to see the people who are living in the houses and how they live. And like Joni said, the fact that you might know the designer or run into the homeowner at the grocery store just kind of adds to the appeal.
Well, I'm sure that has to do with the longevity of being around for 20 years, because in New England, our design shelter magazines haven't been around that long. They've been around 2 or 3 years. And the big ones. So there, we may know some of the designers, but it definitely has not yet reached that level of passion.
Well, there is a real sense of ownership of the magazine. It's funny, I get letters and emails now, but still I get handwritten letters. Sometimes they're just waxing poetically about something that they've seen in the latest issue. Sometimes they're taking me to task for something that they don't like. But it's not coming from, or usually it's not coming from a negative place. It's coming from a, you know, gosh, I was really let down this issue when you photographed this modern interior or whatever the case may be. You know, a couple of years ago, I received a 3-page handwritten letter from a woman who actually lived in Princeton, New Jersey, but was a big fan of the magazine. And she was upset because she felt like I had become obsessed with the color blue, that everything in the magazine was blue. And she said, you know, I'm really concerned because I think you may need therapy. You clearly must be depressed. And but just went on and on about it and was kind of having a little fun with it. But she was serious, too. And I wrote her back and I said, you know, the funny thing is my favorite color is green, but I can't deny that blue and white is a classic combination. People love it. Southerners love it. We do have a lot of blue in the magazine, but please know that I'm open to, you know, color palettes of all kinds, and I promise you that I do not need to go to therapy.
I kind of credit y'all for a phase in designing with lilacs and lavender. A couple of years ago, y'all had on the cover of the magazine, it was a check, a large check. It was the bedroom. You know the one I'm talking about?
You know what, Joni? That was 8 years ago.
Eight.
Can you believe it was that long?
I really credit that with starting the trend of that, using that color. It was an overwhelmingly popular cover, and people talked about it, and, you know.
Well, that was way back in 2001. In fact, I was just coming on board as the editor when we picked that cover. And I remember that it was very, very controversial at the time. People weren't sure. One, we hadn't featured bedrooms on the cover very often at that point, so we weren't sure how those would sell. And then purple, at that time anyway, was a color that you either loved or you hated. And so I can remember some of the powers that be in our circulation department thought that I was off my rocker, so to speak, when we chose that cover. But it ended up being one of the best-selling covers that we ever had.
Can you talk about maybe other of your covers that were your biggest hits? Do you think there's a thread to them of some kind, or what made certain covers be just huge hits on the newsstand?
Sure. Well, if I completely had the answer to that, I would be sitting on an island somewhere because we are all challenged with trying to figure out what sells on newsstand. I can tell you for us, well, the thing that sells more than anything else is our November-December issue, because our readers love the holidays. As far as other things that sell really well, it's usually a cover that has a very clear focus and a clear, easily graspable idea, such as the purple and white bedroom that Joni was mentioning. It was a simple color palette. Again, it was a color palette that you might love or you might not, but it could be interpreted with a lot of different colors. Things that are shot straight on, for instance, tend to sell better for us than rooms that are shot from an angle. They want layers and they want texture and interest, but sometimes if the cover is really cluttered, that's just too much for people to take in, on newsstand anyway, because it's interesting. Research says that a newsstand buyer makes a decision on what magazine they're going to purchase in like 6 seconds.
That, you know, clear colors like blue and white or purple. Yeah, I would see how that would appeal if you have six.
Right. So you want something that really stands out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know for me personally, if I walk by a newsstand, if a magazine is pink, I'll buy it.
Really?
Yeah, like Martha Stewart, anytime she's pink, I'm immediately buying the magazine.
Okay. Yeah, I'll remember that. I'll cover that for sure.
That's interesting.
Now, can we go back? You mentioned, you know, the ownership feel that a lot of your readers have, which is really great, and the letters they write to, and it sort of ties in with the, you know, moving into sort of talking about blogging. Bloggers, we sort of get our backs up a little bit if someone posts a comment that's a criticism. Yet I know that, you know, magazines get criticized all the time and put it in their magazine. You know, you're blue. Why are you depressed? I'm worried about you. What's going on? Or that kind of thing. And I'm wondering, I guess I'm not sure what my question is, other than I think it's interesting that I hadn't really thought about it, that bloggers worry about getting those comments, but magazines get them all the time.
Well, we do get a lot of feedback. I think the difference probably is, depending on whether you moderate your blogs, you know, in your comments or not, is that it's instant. It's out there for the whole world to see, you know, whether you want it to or not, I guess. Again, I know a lot of people moderate their comments, but criticism is painful, of course, and you know, it always stings a little bit. I find generally that our readers are coming from a constructive place. They're coming from, again, that ownership, and that they really care about the magazine. And that's the way I take it, is if they didn't care, that would probably be, you know, a bigger problem. So I'm always very open to constructive criticism and feedback, as long as there is a real purpose about it and it's just not pettiness and meanness. And those I've learned to just sort of set aside, and I try not to let those bother me. I can't say that they don't ever, but, you know, we don't publish letters in our magazine.
Oh, okay.
And it's not because I wouldn't want to address somebody's criticism. It's just I find a lot of times letters columns can be very self-congratulatory.
Yeah.
You know, we've just decided in our magazine that there are other ways that we'd rather use our editorial pages. But I do try to respond as much as I can to every letter that we receive or email that we receive, whether it's something that is praising someone who's praising a story in the magazine or someone who has something negative that they want to say. If they've said it from a place where I feel like they're coming, you know, from a place of respect and that, again, they truly care about their magazine and they want, you know, to see a change because they think it will make it a better read for them. You know, I think that they deserve a response.
Karen, what with the advent of blogging, design blogging, and the Troubles magazines, or, you know, the Hard Times magazines are going through, what do you see for the future of the relationship between design blogs and magazines?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I don't completely have the answer, obviously. I will say, from my own perspective, I am a huge fan of blogs, and I feel like it's not a matter of what's more important, magazines or blogs. It's that they both have something to add to the conversation, so to speak, about design. I think it's great that in many ways blogs have, you know, increased the democratization of design, so to speak. There are a lot of voices out there who have a lot of different opinions, and some people, you know, obviously will never have the opportunity to work at a magazine, but still have a lot to say and have a great perspective. So I think that it's just one of those things that is increasing the awareness and the passion for home and for interior design, and it's just coming from two different mediums. know, obviously magazines have a lot of challenges, particularly I think magazines that are more news oriented, where of course you can go to the internet and get that news so much more quickly than you can get from even a weekly magazine. Or now we're even seeing, you know, with the challenges that newspapers are going through. And I think it's great that there's so much information online and perspectives on design. I hope that they will never replace that physical act of holding a magazine and pouring through the pages and really being able to examine big, beautiful photographs, you know, because that's a very sensory experience that I don't think comes across as well on a computer screen. But I think that there is definitely room for both. And I know that I have become a voracious reader of design blogs. And, you know, I think that is definitely a medium that's here to stay.
I'm curious about, we as bloggers, we all use photos, images from the magazines. And we've all sort of speculated amongst ourselves, you know, are we going to get in trouble? Do you think they care? Anyone who knows better always gives full credit to the magazines. You know, this is where this shot came from, and links it. But what is the take from the magazine side when we're all using all of your images?
Sure. Well, of course, I can only speak for us. I know, again, I'm a big supporter of the whole, you know, blog phenomenon. And I love it when I see one of our images used on a blog, whether it's just somebody who interprets a photograph in a different way or sees something that perhaps we didn't see, you know, when we used it in the magazine, or using it as a theme, kind of a trend or a theme that someone's putting together. Obviously, we love it when we're given credit. And more specifically, when the photographer is given credit. So I think that's really important. I guess from my perspective, unless I saw an image of ours used to disparage someone, a designer, embarrass someone, which, you know, I don't think that that happens very often. I certainly haven't been aware of it as far as our images. You know, I would obviously be concerned about that, because I feel very protective of the people that that we photograph and the homeowners that we showcase in the magazine. But, you know, I really see the design blogs coming, for the most part, at everything from a very positive place. And therefore, I think it's great. Now, you know, one of the challenges that could potentially come into play at some point is that most magazines don't really own the rights to our photographs for people outside of our entities, whether it's our website, our blog, or our magazine. I don't really own the rights for you to use my images or our images. Mm-hmm. So now if a photographer ever had a problem with it, you know, I would not be able to
Stop it.
I think that's a really good point, though, because I know at times I have given credit to the photographer in a spread that I found in a magazine, but now I know I need to make sure that always happens, so I'm glad to know that.
I'd like to say this. I think that with the demise of a lot of magazines, I think it's empowered some bloggers to feel like they're more important. And the truth is that design blogging can't exist without magazines. Magazines can exist without us, but I don't think we can exist without the magazines.
Well, I think it's a mutually beneficial relationship. I really do. And, you know, of course, at this moment in time anyway, magazines are the ones who still have the budgets to go out and do very expensive photo shoots. And we have more of the resources where we can uncover some up and coming designers and some people that maybe, you know, you haven't heard of. And yet, you know what? I've gotten a lot of story ideas out of looking at blogs. In fact, Joni, you blogged a year or so ago about, I think, the daughter of a friend of yours who's an event planner in Austin. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And, you know, we thought, gosh, this event planning team. They look like they have a lot of great style. They're doing, you know, these really fun parties. We ought to be doing a story on them. Now, it's possible right. that I would have never known who they were if I hadn't read them on your blog. So I think that there really is a give and take, and that's one of the reasons why I love, you know, blogs, obviously, that have a very all-encompassing national perspective, but I also enjoy reading blogs that are covering local areas, particularly in my part of the world, and they are sometimes uncovering people and stories that I might not know about if I weren't.
You know, to go further that conversation, I'm trying to do a story on a faux painter that just finished a gorgeous house in River Oaks. And he approached the designer, and she knows my blog, and she said, no, I won't let you give it to Joni because I'm trying to get it published. And I said to him, I said, she doesn't understand that by putting her house on my blog, she probably will get it published. I've had so many scouts have taken my pictures and sent them into magazines, and then have gotten, you know, an agreement to publish. So, you know, whatever, she can, you know, she's shooting herself in the foot.
Actually, I had an experience, the opposite experience, where at Boston Design Magazine, a designer asked me to showcase a kitchen design, and I sat on it for a while because I just never got around to it, and then I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I'll post it now. And he said, well, wait, because this magazine's going to publish it. Let me make sure she's okay with it. And I actually had to pull it from my site. They let me publish it for about 6 weeks, and then I had to pull it when it came out in their magazine. So I think, Karen, you know, I mean, you might have a different perspective, but I think different magazines really do have a different perspective on wanting to have original content and not wanting to have things to have been pre-published.
Sure. Well, as I said, I can't speak for everyone, and, you know, I can see that perspective. I think right now, and again, please correct me, because you all know so much more about your world than I do, the readership is not at the same level as most magazines, I would imagine.
Correct.
And, so, you know, from my point of view, there's probably relatively little overlap. I wish more of my readers knew about all of these great blogs and resources, and we're actually trying to brainstorm some ways, you know, to bring that to the attention of our readers. But I wouldn't imagine there'd be that much overlap between a blog and a magazine. There obviously would be some. But it wouldn't prevent me from wanting to do a story just because an image or the idea was, you know, first on Megan's blog or your blog. You know, that's just a great additional resource for me when I'm looking for story ideas.
But Linda, yours was more regional, so I can kind of see, you know, the regional aspect of that. So, yeah, I do see that. But getting back to this, I wrote when I first started blogging, 2 years ago, one of my first stories was on Southern Accents because I was going to introduce the world to Southern Accents magazine. That's what a joke. But I did something a little while later, and my first contact with anyone in the publishing world was a thank you email from Karen. And I remember I was on cloud nine. I mean, if I would have gotten something from Barack Obama, I wouldn't have been more excited about it, you know.
Oh, I find that hard to believe, but
no. I was just thrilled. I was so thrilled that she had seen it, you know, and I just couldn't believe that she took the time, you know, to say hey, thank you for, you know, showing this picture from our magazine. I thought it was wonderful.
Well, that's why she writes a blog called Gracious Living, because that's a gracious act to do that.
You know, again, I do admire what you all are doing so much. And, you know, I think I was telling Joni fairly recently, or maybe all three of you, when I think I wrote you an email telling you how much I was enjoying listening to the Skirted Roundtable, because I really have. I've listened to every edition, and I think that it's such an interesting concept. I've been reading blogs fairly religiously for about a year and a half. I probably spend a good 30 minutes of my morning, every morning now, just kind of clicking around and visiting all my old friends and trying to find new ones. And it's really become, you know, one of the most pleasurable parts of my day.
This has been the Skirted Roundtable with Joni Webb from Coat to Texas, Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8, I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings, and this week, Karen Carroll, Editor-in-Chief of Southern Accents Magazine, joined us at the Skirted Roundtable. You can visit us online at www.skirtedroundtable.blogspot.com. Or download us on from iTunes, search for the Skirted Roundtable. Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate your comments and suggestions, and we will be back soon.